Well, good morning. Thank you for being here. Thank you for coming back to New Orleans. Thank you for investing in us, investing in our science, in our research, in our practice. But particularly, thank you for investing in our communities. And I'd like you to do something for me. I'd like you to honor our communities. And so I'm asking all of our community health workers to stand. If you're here, if you're working in our research, all of the students are working on science and research, please stand. They are part of our Tulane family, and I hope to keep them with us as much and as long as we can. We're privileged to be part of their family, so thank you for being here. So I, too, have nothing to disclose. Here are the three learning objectives dutifully. See, I'm a really good academic. But what we're talking about is our unique community. So our unique community has an interconnectedness, an intersecting triple burden. And that's disaster preparedness that happens every year. We can't go away from that. It happens between, you know, June and November. The issues that we have in environment and environmental health threats, and the historic burden of health disparities. So it's in that realm, it's in that world that we operate and that we do our research. So I'd like to talk to this morning about investment in science and how science influences practice and ultimately how science benefits communities. So if we take research and practice together and see how it informs science and how it invests, how we invest in science, ultimately that's where we want to go to create community resilience. Notice I purposefully put research at the same level as practice because it's the upstream learning. It's the learning that we do at in the trenches that will inform the bench, i.e. the laboratory part, the laboratory phase of public health is informed by the people phase of public health. I think Linda mentioned earlier the International Auspil Conference. We were a part of it indeed. And some research that we published I think is worthy to mention here. As part of a 2009 research grant, just when we were getting started, the Auspil happened. We went, and for those of you in academia, you know how painful it is to revise the protocol. But we did revise the protocol. We went back to our human subject folks, and we said we wanted to include looking at the Auspil earlier, and it paid off. Because here are the seven factors out of that research that influence disaster readiness. You can read them quicker than I can, but I wanted to point out one. One particular one was that if you could take care, if a community could take care of its special population, it actually could be resilient and it could bounce back. And so, yes, we knew about transportation and access to healthcare, but it is, can you really do what you have to do every day? And so we took a chance, and thank you, Linda, for your leadership. And we have an awesome project officer in the room, Dr. Claudia Thompson. We took a chance, and we didn't design our consortium at Tulane on Canal Street. No, we went to our communities and said, what is it that you're worried about? And these were the three questions. And so we took these three questions and created a whole research community, a research consortium around it. Is the seafood safe to eat? Can I breathe the air? Is it really good for us or is it bad? And is my baby safe? So we took those three questions. And you'll hear some of it today, but tomorrow morning you'll hear from Emily Hartfield if you want to look at bird outcomes. And this afternoon you'll hear the voice of the community, you'll hear our community health workers talk about it, not in this format, but in a format of a roundtable, as well as Wednesday morning. So I encourage you to go listen to them. There's a lot to learn from them. So one of the three projects in that consortium is focusing on, our entire consortium is focusing on pregnant women, almost 1,200. It's the only and the largest cohort that we have, and we desperately hope to keep the babies, being able to keep following the babies. But what we did in this project is to develop a community-driven disaster mobile health platform. So we connected our community health workers through mobile health technology to our women. And we focused on the most vulnerable of women, those that are receiving or are eligible to receive women, infant, children support. And so here is the design of the study. There are five visits that happen, and these are virtual visits within each of the trimesters. There are young women, 18, and actually you'll see the cohort, 18 to 45 years old. There are two cohorts currently, 96 and 141, and I'll show you some very preliminary data of the first cohort. So the community health workers are involved in every step of the data, every step of the research, from data collection all the way to dissemination. So they are the researchers. Here are some demographics that you'd see. So it's a very young cohort, you see that. Primarily African American, you see the comparison between the two cohorts for demographics. Most have high school diploma. The majority are never married, and the majority live in Jefferson. Some of them are some kind of insurance. As you can see, it's Bayou Health is our local health plan. So let's look a little bit at the first cohort, and these are fresh out of the shoot data that have not been published yet, and so I am asking you to honor that. One of the survey tools that we use is to look at the quality of life. These are the 8 subscales, and while we don't have them very detailed yet, we hope to have that out at the conference early next year. I want to share with you 2 sets of results. The first is an interesting one, but not so much as the second. The first is that of all of the SF36 subscales varied significantly by trimester. So it was telling us what was happening in the first, the second, and the third trimester, and how the environment actually was influencing their health. The second one, though, is one that we're not necessarily perplexed about, but it's a very interesting one, is that if we compared our women in our cohort with nationally women who are 18 to 34 years old, we are seeing that they have higher fatality and mental health. So what does this mean? Across all trimesters. So does this mean that our women are indeed more resilient despite all the disasters? Or does it mean that the community health worker is making this difference? We don't know that yet. We have to analyze it further, but this is a very interesting finding. So as part of, and yesterday Sharon Larson was here, as part of our work with, supported by NIEHS, there is a special supplement of funding that we've had to look specifically at resilience. And we at Tulane chose to look at the role of culture in resilience, and Chris Mundorf is sitting here. This is part of his doctoral dissertation. So how do you look at culture, and how does culture influence resilience? We met with the women, we talked to the women, we analyzed what they told us through the topics that they bring up, through some power setting, and then to look at what the survey ultimately said. So here are some early findings, and you'll see they're very early too, but you'll see what it's quite telling, because it goes against what is commonly known. People believe that we all trust our doctors or trust our communities, and I'm using the terms that the community are using. But if you look at hurricanes, it seems that the doctor is the last person to ask any advice about, right? It's family. Again, family is coming up. But I want you to pay attention to the right-hand side of the column. Every time it is TV and news that came out rather high. So we have a responsibility to work with our reporters to increase that science literacy that we talked about. So if you look at indoor air, that's interesting. Also, family know better about indoor air, and somehow but if you wanted real news, you should still go to TV, to the TV about indoor air. Now, if you look at outdoor air, their local leaders have more trust than federal leaders. And if you look at silence, the police knows best. And so this is real data coming from our communities. So then we asked, well, of the things you could do about hurricanes, indoor air, outdoor air, and community violence, what is it that is most important to you? Now look at that first row. Nothing was extremely important to do about indoor and outdoor air. That's very telling. Some very important things were to do: avoid affected parts of the house if it relates to indoor. Some things that were moderately important is to paint over those mold spots or have a gun. So our next steps here are to begin to evaluate the demographic differences. Why are we seeing these cultural differences and how do they relate to ultimately cultural resilience? So we talked about investment in research, investment in science. You'll hear a lot more from Dr. Goldstein this afternoon about that. But we're investing early. This is our Emerging Scholars High School program. We're extremely proud of them. Yesterday, one of them exhibited right next to the PhD students, and you wouldn't know if I didn't tell you that she wasn't, that she was just a senior at Ben Franklin here locally. But what we also do is we work with the teachers, and this is what will create sustainability for us. The program, the content of the program is directly aligned with what the teachers must accomplish in the classroom. So it's directly aligned with the educational standards in the classroom. And what we're currently doing, if you look at the right-hand side, we actually, I wasn't allowed to go because they thought I wouldn't perform well. But they went into the marshes and they planted Christmas trees and to see how they could use that as an ecosystem protection. But what's currently happening is that we have been invited by the teachers and approved by the principals to go in and help them build their science laboratories and teach them environmental science as part of their science curriculum. So this has not happened before, that the doors have been opened. And this is a program that is possible because of a special investment. You've heard about a lot of investments today. It's an investment not in research, it's an investment in capacity building called the Gulf Region Health Outreach Program, and I'm extremely proud that we're privileged to be a part of that. So we built investment in practice as well here through educating our primary care physicians who can't answer the questions of our communities. What does it mean to my health? What does it mean? Do I have this rash because I was at a patty or I picked up a tarball? And so we're doing that through case studies in environmental medicine. And you know, just Chuck mentioned before, one of the next two has to do with dispersions. How do physicians answer community questions about dispersions? For those of us who are parents or who had little babies, you know, some of them were fussy and some of them not so fussy. And we always thought that it's the baby's fault. No, I know for sure that it wasn't the baby's fault. It's because we were stressed, and that's what we see here too. So this is a national program, and we were the first and the only affiliate in the region. And you could see some of the quotes from the moms. We were there. We are their lifeline. And what we've done for the program, this is the first time we were invited to host a national meeting, is we're infusing science in this program. It's a practice program, but we're making it a research program. And we're actually, the group has already applied for 2 grants, speaking about sustainability. Here are our community health workers in practice. We do spell that like that. This is what's our obesity program. Where I want to point out the investment that the Gulf Region Health Outreach Program has done in Grand Isle, where the closest clinic is an hour away. So we're investing in health education there. These are our this is a professional workshop from our community health workers. But here, I want to almost end with this, and yes, I'll honor that, Alan. Up until now, we've talked about all the research dollars are letting us do the 2 blue or purple, how they're approaching on your screen. Letting us do that. Letting us do research, and letting us do research translation. But research and research translation by themselves cannot build, truly build, can give us answers, but cannot truly build community resilience. It's that community service part. So it is our commitment to integrate research dollars with capacity building dollars to ultimately create that. And that's such a pressure that the Gulf Region Health Outreach Program has given us. So let me end with real sustainability as you see it on the front line. Fiat, one of our recipients of a subcontract to embed community health workers, now has their own grant focusing on one of the number one issues. It's violence, domestic violence. But the one that's very close to my heart, and I want to recognize Courtney, who is in the room. Courtney's mom actually is the head of the Crescent City WIC Services organization and clinic. And Mary Schultes just received the HRSA Healthy Start grant. So Mary turned around and came to us and said, and now I'm going to employ you to teach our community, to teach our people to service as community health workers. So now we are the grantee, and Mary is the grantor. What a wonderful way to end this morning. Thank you.